Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of warriors.
Hello!
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 Viva!
Oh, is it a troll?
No, he's a harlot!
Oh, we couldn't resist.
Yeah. Harry was playing with the thing before, and we got carried away.
We did. We got carried away. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's of Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France.
Howdy.
Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, and our guest in the Los Angeles area is Craig. I lost
it. Hamill.
Thank you.
Craig Hamill.
Hamill. Sorry.
Hamill like camel, but with an H.
Yeah, sorry, Craig. It's, you know...
It's not spelled to say.
It's
it's a team effort, guys. I'm honored to be here.
I know
it takes a team for us.
This was created by one guy, and he did all the stuff except running his own board when it was on commercial radio. And now it takes three of us to do what one man
to even
did.
Get started.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway. Welcome to the show. We're going to get to you in just a few moments here, but first we got to do.
Coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse is the good, the bad, and the bovine. And this is a little journey through history, heritage, and I don't know what else. And just so Craig, so you know what's happening, I start with today, which is the 17th, and I travel 3 days back in time, but not really, but in jumping years and stuff. And then I travel 3 days forward in time, but none of them are actually in forward. They're all still in the backwards.
It's like the Twilight Zone.
Twiddly-dum zone. And I'll start with January 14, 1892. Harold Eugene Hal Roach was born. Film and TV producer, director, screenwriter. Founder of Hal Roach Studios, active in the 1910s to the 1990s. First film job was an extra in a J. Warren Kerrigan Western. He produced over 1,206 shows, wrote 227 and directed 159. Now, moving further back in time to the 15th, in 1541, King Francis I of France, or I guess, is that one or first? I guess he's
first.
The first Francis. Anyhow, gave Jean-Francois Roberval a commission to settle the province of New France, which is Canada for you Canadians, and to provide for the spread of the Holy Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I don't know what's going on there. And the 16th, moving forward again in time, into 1778, this is one close to our hearts, Harry and myself and Todd, Harry DeWitt Carey II. He passed away in 1947. He was an actor, director, producer, screenwriter, one of silent film's first superstars, and one of the very first stars of Westerns. Now, in 1781, the Battle of Cowpens took place. Continental troops under Brigadier General Daniel Morgan, one of the most respected battlefield actioneers of the Revolution. Going forward another day now, this would be tomorrow, but not tomorrow, but in 1782, Daniel Webster was born. He was an American lawyer and statesman, one of the most prominent lawyers of the 19th century, argued over 200 cases before the Supreme Court. On the 19th, in 1807, Robert Edward Lee, Confederate general, overall commander of the Confederate States of America, and leader of the Army of North Virginia, was born. And then finishing out our trip into the future, but was really 1920, on the 20th, Jason DeForest Kelly, who we had a show on him, and mm-hmm. he wrote a beautiful biography, one of our favorite characters. He's an actor, a screenwriter, a poet, and a singer. His first Westerns were three episodes of The Lone Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
I know.
And he also received a Golden Boot Award in 1999, which now means we've opened the door to Craig and his fount of knowledge on film.
Okay, the Silent Movie Club.
Secret
Movie Club. What the devil is this all about?
You can't tell us. It's a secret.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So first off, it's an honor to be on the show. I just learned a whole bunch of new facts. I didn't even know that Canada was originally called New France.
See,
so
there's facts that you don't have any use for.
When was the last time you saw a movie based in New France?
Yeah, I know.
I was writing it down because I didn't know if I'll be quizzed later, but I Daniel Webster I loved, and that was amazing. And it's an honor to be here and to answer your question, not to be evasive. My name is Craig Hamill. I'm the founder and head programmer of a Los Angeles-based organization called Secret Movie Club. It is neither secret nor a club. I guess I can get into how it got its name in a little bit, but we try to show great movies from all time periods from all around the world. So it could be, I heard you talking about silent cinema. We've shown like the amazing F.W. Murnau movie Sunrise from 1927 with a live orchestra, all the way to horror movies that maybe only came out a few years ago. During Halloween and everything in between, we're mostly at the Million Dollar Theater, which is in downtown Los Angeles and is LA's first movie palace. Actually, Sid Grauman, before he ever did the Chinese or the Egyptian, when he came down from Alaska and San Francisco, the first movie theater he built was the Million, which is right at the corner of Broadway and Third. And then I'll wrap this up. The other part we do along with showing movies on film as often as we can, because we've got film projectors in there. We also do festivals, premieres, short film open mics, workshops. We really want to be a part of helping young people and anyone who really believes in cinema and movies. We want to help them make movies, screen movies, and just enjoy all being together in a movie theater.
Wow. Todd, have you ever been to that particular movie house?
Yes, I have. And in fact, that's how I met Craig.
Ah.
I went to a double feature of Chinatown and Sunset Boulevard.
Ooh.
At the Million Dollar Theater, which is next door to the Grand Central Market here in Los Angeles. And Nolan and I had a grand time. And while we're there, we got to go to Donut Man next door and have their really messy strawberry donut, which Todd wears.
It's still on his tie.
Yeah. And I met Craig there, and he could not have been more accommodating and affable, and immediately said, I love film and I love to talk about film. And I was like, my God, am I looking in a mirror?
Yeah. He's one of us.
For myself being this good looking. So, and, you know, he knows a lot about film. He has a passion for John Ford, as we all do, and our audience does. And he also likes Anthony Mann, Jimmy Stewart, Joel McRae Westerns, and so on. So, and Peckinpah as well.
And Clint Eastwood.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, it just, to me, was a natural mix. I really just wanted to chat with him, hoping to find out about more movies coming. But he was all in to talk with us and come on the show. So I have to tell you, Craig, we're probably more honored than you are, to be honest. We love having somebody like you.
I was looking over your stuff, and you know, you're going in and you know nothing about the person, and I'm going, okay, I hope he knows something about Westerns. And if your knowledge is so broad and so all-encompassing that I was going, wow. In fact, you remind me of a guy we had on a show named Travis Mills, which maybe you should look up sometime, because this guy will impress you as well. But, you know, just talk. I want to hear something.
Well, I want to know, you know, you're relatively young compared to the three of us. And
God bless you. That's kind of you to say.
Well, we're up into the triple figures when it comes to age.
But You've had an interest in film since a kid, being a kid.
5 years old.
Yeah, you went to college and studied film and such, and studied with some of the greats around the world.
Czechoslovakia.
Oh, man.
Tell us about that.
Man, you guys have done your research.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm of Czech heritage, so that's really cool. That you got
Dobry
to do
den,
that.
Yeah,
Harry's wearing his Czech t-shirt right now.
No, actually.
It says Riders of the Czech Sky.
Anyway, talk about that. How those experiences got you to form this organization to for film.
Sure. Yeah, you've got it. But I do have to correct you. I'm not to get into a battle here, but I'm more on. I'm incredibly honored. It's very kind, everything you said. But when someone comes up and they want to talk movies, it's my honor, my joy, my pleasure.
Amen.
So thank you, all of you guys.
Sure, the same way with us.
The short version, because I try to be short. I'm Irish, and I can also give you the long version.
But long version.
The short version is it's weirdly in my blood. My great-grandfather, who came over from Russia, was a tailor and ended up a tailor at MGM in the heyday, the 1930s.
Oh, man.
My grandmother was on the set of The Wizard of Oz because my great-grandfather was the tailor for the Tin Man's outfit.
Oh, my God.
And she has a memory of being there when they shot... when the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion are watching the guards outside of the Wicked Witch, mm-hmm. his castle, and they're singing the oh-wee-oh. She was there the day they shot that.
Oh.
And she saw Jimmy Stewart and Maureen Sullivan in a movie called The Mortal Storm, because her dad had to keep sewing up Jimmy Stewart's costume because he got shot in a scene. And so it was sort of in the blood. And then my uncle made a movie when I was three called Chasing Dreams, which turned out to be one of Kevin Costner's first films, like independent baseball movie. And I was in that movie in one scene, not with Costner, but one scene where I threw a football between my uncle and his on-screen star kissing.
It was scary.
And I remember that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I remember that scene.
I think they had to give me like three takes. But then, cut forward, I always loved movies. My family always loved movies. And my mom was the one who showed me all the classics, because she had a really hard rule that if you're not 13, you can't watch PG-13. But weirdly, because the ratings didn't apply to classic movies, we could watch any classic film.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad, my folks divorced, unfortunately, but they were both great parents. My dad was a typical sort of single divorced dad. If he wanted to watch Dirty Harry, that's what we were watching. And then my mom would get furious. But I got to see. Oh, it is a classic. I love it. I love Don Siegel. I love Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
But so I got to see all my rated R movies with my dad. And by the time I was in high school, even 13, I knew that I was going to devote my life to movies. I just love them. And then I went to the University of Southern California Film School, studied mm-hmm. to be a movie maker. In that time, as you referenced, I did a semester at the famous Czech film school, FAMU, where Miloš Forman actually went and made Loves of a Blonde, which is one of my favorite films of all time, before he came here to the States and made like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Amadeus.
Mm-hmm.
After school, I got my BA and MFA there in film. After that, I did the typical starving as a movie maker thing. And cut to... some of my friends are starting to make their films, and I asked them, what advice do you have? And all of them, to a person, said, you know what? Making a movie isn't even 50% of the game. It's at most maybe 49%.
Hmm.
51% of the game is marketing it, mm-hmm. distributing it, building up an audience, and breaking even so someone will give you money to make another movie. Very solid business mm-hmm. advice. So, when I had been at USC, I had had an organization where we would show movies and we would invite people to speak. And I'd been sort of the head of that. And we had amazing people, like Robert Wise came in to speak when he was alive about West Side Story. And we had people like Michael Mann, the director of Heat, and John, and et cetera, et cetera. And so I thought, okay, what if I show movies at theaters I'll show movies I love. I've done this before, and I'll learn how to build an audience, how to market, how to distribute. And I showed our first film, which was Raiders of the Lost Ark on 35 millimeter in 2016 at the Vista Theater in Los Feliz. And just long story short, through help, like it always is, the help of a lot of people who gave me good advice while I was trying to figure it out, we eventually started to advertise using social media, and we started to pack the house. And suddenly from showing one movie a month, I was showing one movie a week. Then I was showing like three movies a week. And then I sat down with my wife in 2019 and I said, I think this is my full-time job. I didn't even realize it was in that weird way life is. And so we have been around, this will be our 10th year. And we try to show movies in great theaters in Los Angeles, but we also do podcasts and blogs and anything movie culture. And we really just movies, as you guys know, and I'm going to be done in the next few sentences.
Cool.
But as you guys know, movies can be anything. It's such a big tent, and cinema can do so much, whether people just want to go escape and laugh and see a great romantic comedy, or they want to travel around the world and see a movie that maybe was made in Japan about samurai. And it also gets you to empathize. And so we really just try to show all kinds of movies. So whatever your tastes are, you know, you'll come into the theater, you'll have a great time. And so I've been doing Secret Movie Club since 2016. And final thing, because I know it was hinted at the beginning, when I was in college and just after it in my 20s, I started a thing called Secret Movie Club, which I would invite my friends to see a movie. And the only rules were it had to be amazing and it couldn't be obvious. So you couldn't, as much as we all love Jaws, you couldn't show Jaws because everyone had seen Jaws. So you had to show a movie that would be a real discovery. And that's why I called it Secret Movie Club. And we'd invite, we'd all get it together in an apartment. We'd, you know, drink beer and watch some crazy movie no one had ever heard of. And when I started this organization, I loved the name so much, I didn't even think about it intellectually. I just called it Secret Movie Club.
Cool.
But it's not secret, and it's not a club.
That is so
catchy.
Cool.
It catches you.
Yeah, very cool. Todd, get in there.
So, Craig, you go on this journey of exploring film, and there, as you said, there are so many different ways you can go and in your exploration. And you start to, you know, you had your preconceived notions from the stuff you watched on television, the stuff your dad showed you and so forth. But who was the first filmmaker that really kind of grabbed you by the short hairs and just started tossing you around like a Raggedy Ann doll?
Well, that is, I have the answer to that question, and it's, The short answer, you know, it's become just the way that the world is. I'll get it right out, but it was Woody Allen, actually.
Interesting.
Of all people. I tell this story all the time. I was born in 1977. So when I started to, I was always watching movies, but when I sort of took the reins myself, there were video stores, as you guys remember, like video stores everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, my mom lived in Orange County and my dad lived in LA, and I had a job tutoring when I was 13, 14, so I had a little money. And there was this video store called Video Laguna, and it was run by five Persian brothers. I remember this vividly.
Ooh.
And I would go to them, and I had seen an Academy Awards. This is when I'm about 14 years old, and the previous Academy Awards had done one of their montages. And one of the scenes was of this man with red hair and glasses in a classroom. It was very funny. And I went to them and I said, "What's that movie?" And I remember the brother behind the counter was like, "Oh, you are talking about Annie Hall." And I was like, "Annie Hall?" And so he went to the comedy section. He got Annie Hall. I went home. I watched Annie Hall, which won Best Picture in 1977. And rest in peace, Diane Keaton, who just passed this year. And so I was watching Woody Allen, Diane Keaton. And, you know, the movie was shot by the guy who had shot The Godfather. And it just all came together when I was watching the film. I was like, man, there's something about the style and the way this is written. And it's, you know, and I was only 14. I had not gone through anything that the characters had gone through. But it felt truthful and funny. And from there, I ended up watching everything Woody Allen did, and this was in 91, 92 when I was 14. So all the way from Take the Money and Run, even What's New Pussycat, I'd like that. I got everything.
Oh, that's
all
cool.
The way, yeah, all the way through Shadows and Fog, which was the movie that was most recently on video. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is, and I don't know if it was this way with you guys, when you really get into an author or a movie maker or a painter, you start to read maybe what they said in interviews, sure. Or you read mm-hmm. little biographies.
Yeah.
And sure enough, Woody Allen was always talking about Ingmar Bergman and Federico Fellini. And I was like, well, who are these guys? So, then, you know, the brothers of the video store were like, well, that's the world cinema section. So they took me over and I started to watch all these Ingmar Bergman movies from Sweden and all these Italian movies, these Fellini movies from Italy. And then from there, it's sort of, you know, your path, the path just opens up to you because then you read about them and they talk about their influences. And very shortly after that, I was getting really into John Ford and Howard Hawks because everybody talked about John Ford and Howard Hawks. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop there because obviously I could go on and on and on. But that's how it started.
Cool. We got to do our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Craig Hamill's our guest. The Secret Movie Club is what he runs. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts. We'll be back with much more of our program right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
What happened to you?
Oh, we was having an argument with one of them cow steel nesters when a couple of fellas in the store jumped us from behind.
Who were they?
I don't know. Never saw them before.
More settlers, I suppose. They're coming in like grasshoppers.
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, and Ray Whitley there, and the Texas Washboard Rag.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. Hey, if you like that kind of music, or this kind of music, when we're not doing our podcast or live stream here, you can just tune in, click that radio player, and you'll hear bunches of these old-time cowboy songs.
24/7. Yeah, day and night.
Exactly.
Dawn or dark.
Well, I'm hoping so. It hasn't gone down yet, but, yeah. You know, I knock on wood. Harry Alexander, Brunker to France. Todd Roberts back with you on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Craig Hamill's our guest. The Secret Movie Club.
You know, I saw here where you mentored with Mar Dick Martin, who was the screenwriter on Mean Street, and I had the great blessing to work on Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And I studied Scorsese through this thing, and the man was just... He's fascinating to watch, and he's his own worst enemy, because when he would be shooting a scene, he would be biting his nails, so he wore gloves, and he would giggle, and just, he would get so into it that it was like he would almost choke to death to keep from laughing out loud. It was, oh, what a trip.
Well, you were there at the very beginning.
Yeah, well, this was his first, I think it was his first film after Mean Street.
But it was. Was that mostly shot? I was listening to the commercials. Where was that? Where did you work with him? Because I know it was a bit of a road trip movie.
Well, it's funny because it's supposed to be all over the U.S., but they shot the whole thing here in the Tucson area. And one of the great things, too, is on a weekend, he showed Mean Streets for the cast and crew. And that was the first time I'd got to see it. And what an impressive film there. I saw... The old crazy Italian at his beginnings, you know.
It's funny where we left off before the commercial break. Pretty shortly after I started to just inhale films, Scorsese, of course, was one of the early movie makers where I watched everything. And to this day, Mean Streets is still one of my favorites of his.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I actually interned for him in the 90s, but it was great. I loved doing it, but it was a bit bittersweet because, of course, he's New York based. So I was in Los Angeles with his office in L.A. But nevertheless, I got to look at the books he was considering and the scripts he was considering. And he's given so much to cinema. Oh. He's just one of the current living masters, no doubt.
And the restoration that he's done, just for that alone, he should get some kind of humongous award for his film restoration.
Oh, yeah, he has earned cinematic sainthood many times over for being a teacher, a great movie maker, and really for and you guys may have talked about this on your show, but he was one of the earliest people who realized that the film, the way it was prior to the 1980s, it was dissolving in the cans.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these incredible movies that had been made in the silent era, there's some horrifying fact that like 50 to 60, it's probably higher, I hate to say it, 60% of all movies made before 1928 are lost because they just disintegrated. And he saw that, and he was a proponent during Raging Bull of a film stock that would be durable.
Ooh.
and he really was the one that kept it going until digital really came along as the archival medium, and we have to thank him for being able to watch all this great cinema and for him fighting to preserve it, as you said.
Yeah. So that those films that are preserved now, The Silence and such, have they been transferred to digital, or has there been some other process?
That's a great question. It's yes, and I think about this all the time. There's in the movie community since the dawn of digital, really is the medium that people are shooting new movies on. That would, you know, more or less be the 90s, let's say the 1990s when that really started to take off. A lot of people, and I'm one included, I still prefer the way that film looks.
Exactly. Like vinyl.
I don't like when people lie to people and tell them that it's better, because when we show movies at the Secret Movie Club, if we show, you know, just to give you an example, we just did Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, which mm-hmm. That's always our last movie, right around Christmas time. And when I show that on film, which I do, the emotion, the tears, I don't know that you can quantify it, but it feels like people are, forgive me for quantifying it here, but like 30 to 40% more heightened when it's film. Mm-hmm. When it's digital,
I noticed that the reactions are more subdued. It's just a different medium. Now, to that point, and I'm talking, this is going to be a little ambivalent, and I am ambivalent, but I also think you have to be a realist. And the truth is, time marches on, and there are these advances, and no one's going to probably have film projectors in 100 years.
Right.
And so if you acknowledge that truth, that means you've got to transfer everything you can digitally. So you have it on hard drives, you have it in the digital format, so whatever the next format's going to be, you can move it from there. So I am all for, and Scorsese's the same, and I think a lot of people who try to be realists are the same. You can't just say, no, it has to be preserved on film, because there's going to come a point when no one can show it.
Yeah.
And so now what's happening, and you guys probably know this, is a lot of movies are getting what are called 4K digital transfers or right. restorations.
Yep.
And you probably hear that term, so that it's the best it could possibly be, and it'll be able to be screened for 50, God willing, 50, 100, 200 years.
And what's scary to me, though, is I can just see somebody with their iPhone watching Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be you, Bunker.
No, it wouldn't be. I'm not going to own an iPhone.
You,
go ahead. Yeah, it's a great point you just made, Bunker. The thing that I always think is, I'm an optimist, and for better or for worse, I am an optimist. I get it from my mom for sure. And my feeling is that even if people get introduced to things on their phone, which is probably very true, a lot of people don't love being alone in their room or in their apartment. Mm-hmm. And so we do notice, we get a lot of young people that come to the theater. So even if they saw it, to give you an example, even if they saw Lawrence of Arabia or a clip on their phone, if we say, hey, we're showing it in 70 millimeter, at this movie theater, and you don't gouge them with the ticket prices, you get a lot of people who want to get out of the house and have that experience. So I always think it's, you have to work with where people are. And then, God willing, you can bring them to the theaters.
And especially those that have seen it before.
Yeah. Most interesting. Okay, we got to do our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Craig Hamill's our guest, and it's the Secret Movie Club, although it's not really.
The secret is out.
Yeah, the secret's out. Anyway, so we're going to be back with him, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We'll be back after this.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000 square foot clubhouse, 200 full service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Yosemite Sam! It's Yosemite Sam!
Yosemite Sam!
Yeah, Yosemite Sam! The roughest, toughest he-man, snuffest hombre has ever crossed the Rio Grande. And I ain't no mamby-pamby.
This is the Voices of the West.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, and our guest Craig Hamill also in Los Angeles. We be talking film. And Craig, I got to tell you, if you didn't recognize that, that's the theme to one of the great westerns for television, The High Chaparral, of which our co-host here, Mr. de France, he didn't star in. He was a stuntman in at least 50 episodes.
That's right, 52.
52 episodes of that program. And so
I made a living falling on my head, and it didn't affect me at all.
So I have to play that, otherwise he walks.
I had my bags packed. I was out the door.
You know, and speaking of the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club, they got big doings going on out there. Check them out at their website, TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Fun day.
Indeed, big doings, big
bring
doings.
Bring your earplugs.
For sure.
I was listening to that commercial, and it was reminding me, my dad, there's a skeet shooting club, believe it or not, here in Los Angeles, just outside the San Fernando Valley, and my dad took me out there and taught me how to skeet shoot with the rifle, cool. So you were taking me back.
Hey, nice.
Cool.
You do a blog on the Secret Movie Club website, and there were two articles that caught me. The first one is M for Masterpiece by SMC founder programmer Craig Hamill, and it talks about the story of the movie M, directed by Fritz Lang, which I'm really surprised. You said that it's listed in 56th and 75th, respectively, in the Critics and Directors 2012 site and sound poll of top 100 movies of all time. I'm really surprised that it did not get a higher ranking.
You know, part of that's because it's a popular vote.
Well,
people aren't familiar with it. The balloon in the phone lines, that still stops my heart every time I see it.
I mean, and what a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's interesting how subjective it is, but M to me is one of the greatest movies of all time. I mean, Bunker was just talking about it. You know, for people who don't know that film, it's one of the original sort of serial killer movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that the film comes at it, directed by German filmmaker Fritz Lang, is rather than just telling it as a procedural between the police and the killer, we know who the killer is from the very beginning. We know it's Peter Lorre.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, as you guys know, is it actually shows how every different social strata of the city reacts. So not only do you see the police, but you see the criminals, you see the parents, you see the workers, you see the underworld, you see the killer, and it cross cuts, you see the politicians. It's one of the most intelligent, gripping films I've ever seen in the cinema of it, because it was one of the first sound films. I think it's Fritz Lang's first sound film. You just see someone who's using cinema to tell an incredibly complex story. And it's fascinating and gripping, and it's as modern now as it was in 1931.
And you think about, this is what gets me, is you think about the vile act that he is about to commit, and they don't show it. It's just that balloon floating away.
Right.
And to me, that is more violent than anything you could see.
Yeah, it definitely shows something.
Well, Lang is letting your imagination paint the story, which is always more interesting, I feel, than having somebody do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So on that subject, Craig, you have such a diverse knowledge of film. So many times when I've sat with film people and we've talked and I've shared this story of my own personal experience and I asked them to share theirs, you know, early on when I realized that Kurosawa inspired The Magnificent Seven and The Man with No Name, being the Clint Eastwood films with Sergio Leone, my mind was blown. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, what? How does a Japanese samurai movie inspire two great of the greatest Westerns? And it took me a long time to kind of not jump off the bridge, as it were, to try to wrap my head around that. Did you have some of the same kind of aha moment?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. So my three favorite directors, my trinity, are Akira Kurosawa, John Ford, and the French filmmaker Jean Renoir. Those are those. Now, I love so many movie makers, but they're the three that I just go back to again and again and again. I think a lot about.
The icing actually, on the cake.
What's that?
The icing on the cake.
Icing. Got it. Yeah. Icing on the cake. But to your point, actually, hopefully I returned the favor. So you find out that Kurosawa inspired those things, but Kurosawa himself was hugely inspired and influenced by John Ford. Mm-hmm. And yes. One, you know, you guys probably know these stories, but one of his homages to John Ford is in Seven Samurai, which is my own. If I could only give one movie to the aliens, it would be Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai from 1954. Oh, yeah. And in that film, which is about, you know, these samurai defending these helpless farmers against bandits in the 1500s, as people in samurai die, they bury the swords. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie or remember the image, but
vividly.
Yeah, they create these mounds, these graves, and they put the swords, the samurai swords, in the graves. Well, that image actually comes from John Ford's Victor McLaughlin starring movie, The Lost Patrol, which, you know, has Boris Karloff. It's a movie I love. Have you guys seen Lost Patrol?
Yes.
So, you know, Lost Patrol is this crazy movie about these British legionnaires, I think, who are being picked off one by one by an unseen assassin in the desert. And as they die, they put swords in the mounds of the graves. So, you know, there's always this. And I think that dialogue is so important. Because what can happen, I think, is that's how, you know, just like plants or just like anything, you get these hybrids and the genre gets refreshed because someone sees a samurai movie and they go, oh, that samurai, I'm going to bring some of that to a Western. Mm-hmm. And then vice versa, a young Akira Kurosawa sees a Hollywood classic and he's like, I'm going to bring that to the samurai movie. So that would be my answer to that. I just want to say one more thing because I'm so obsessed with John Ford and Akira Kurosawa. You guys probably know this, so forgive me if I'm telling you a story you already know, but during World War II, John Ford was really with the CIA, what became the CIA, and he was also with the Navy. And when we occupied Japan after the war, he went into their film industry and he met a very young Akira Kurosawa who was directing films. And John Ford would never admit that he was an artist, would never admit that he watched all this cinema. He always wanted people to just think it was a job of work and he was just a, you know, ragtag filmmaker. But he loved cinema and he recognized that Kurosawa was a real talent. And it was John Ford who fought and advocated for Akira Kurosawa to make some of his movies in post-war Japan during the occupation. And Kurosawa never really thought that Ford had seen any of his movies. And when he sat down with them, when they met again in the 50s, Ford turned to him and he said, you know, you really like rain in your movies, Akira. And Akira was like, and that's when I realized he had seen all of my movies. Someone who had seen all of my films would have understood how I used rain. And Kurosawa himself would wear sunglasses as a tip of the hat to how John Ford went with sunglasses. So nice. that whole interchange is always happening.
Nice. So that meeting also spurned off another story, which is they spent time together. And Ford was wearing his English tweed driving cap, and which he wore often. He also wore a fedora. He also wore a baseball cap. And Kurosawa commented on the tweed cap. And when he got back to Japan, a package showed up. And it was from John Ford, and it was the same English tweed driving cap. And he used to wear it all the time, and whenever he would wear it, he would say to people, did you see my cap? you know about this cap? John Ford gave me this cap. This came from John Ford.
Nice.
And if people didn't know who Ford was, he would go into an explanation who Ford was and so on. Only to take your point even farther, Craig, is that we then, years later, I'm watching George Lucas talk about Star Wars trilogy, and he says, well, it's a Western. And I'm like, a Western? Wow, okay, how is it a Western? Well, he says, they're Westerns because, you know, of the characters in their principles and so on, but they're also samurai films. Hidden Fortress by Kurosawa is what inspired the Death Star in the Star Wars trilogies. And then the lightsaber is a samurai sword. So it's interesting how you can go back and look from Lucas all the way back to Ford.
Oh, absolutely. And that, I mean, you just this conversation, you know, in Star Wars, when they burn Luke's aunt and uncle's house and Luke returns and it's been burned down,
that's
a direct, that's the Searchers. Yeah, exactly. direct homage. Yeah. And, yeah, sorry, go for it, guys.
I have a two-part question for you here. Why are epics difficult and rewarding? And name your some epic Westerns.
Oh, man. Thank you guys for letting me. It's wonderful to talk to you. Thank you. I just talking to you guys, I think you're just being very kind to me. I think you guys all know
all Greg, these stories I'm telling already. We don't like many people.
We're
and
dumb and we're learning.
Involved, we even like less people.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. And just this is my favorite thing to do. So to answer your question, Bunker, you know, my own take would be to do an epic well. You know, you hear a lot of the greatest directors equate directing to actually military maneuvers, which I think is always really interesting. And they say actually what you are is a kind of general, and you have to talk to the people below, and there's a chain of command. And but when you're a filmmaker, especially as the budgets get higher, which would be the case in an epic, you're not doing everything. There's no way you could. You're dealing with a crew of 500 to 1,000 to thousands of people. And so the ability to communicate your vision and tell a story with thousands of people, I just have to imagine it gets exponentially harder. And then I would say, this is my opinion, you know, a good epic is actually also very intimate. You know, you mentioned Lawrence of Arabia, one of the greatest. When you've seen that movie a number of times, you begin to realize it's a really weird, quirky look at a guy. I mean, it's really about a very singular, eccentric personality. And if you weren't able to get intimate and get in the close-up and find intimate scenes and do those as well, you know, like him lighting the match, you know, or him just being with the gentleman that he saves that then he later has to kill. If you couldn't do those scenes as well as you do the thousands of extras, you know, charging, the epic doesn't work. And I think that the people who do epics, the best ones, they understand that alternation between the sort of the wide shot and the close-up, I mean, to put it in a dumb way, or the intimate scene versus the epic scene. And in terms of my favorite epic Westerns, you know, it's funny because I don't know that this exactly qualifies, but I mean, one of my favorite Westerns of all time, no surprise, is Sergio Leone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And, you know, I would just cite there, when you see that movie, really it's a three-hander between Clint Eastwood, Eli Wallach, and Lee Van Cleef. But then suddenly you're at this huge battle over a bridge with thousands of extras.
Civil War.
You know, Civil War. And they stumble in and out of the Civil War. And I think the reason that, in my opinion, is Leone's best movie and one of the best movies ever made is because it's making this very strange point about existence and the selfishness of these men who just want this gold in this graveyard. And then suddenly they stumble across a war where, you know, thousands of young people are dying ostensibly for a cause. And all they want to do is cross the bridge to get some gold. And so it sort of juxtaposes human selfishness with human selflessness. And only very few filmmakers can create that kind of tension and interplay. So that would be one of my favorites. I can name others, but I don't want to ramble.
The metaphor of the bridge, you know.
Yeah, that's perfect. We got to do our last commercial break here on AM, on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, and give radio call letters here. Gary Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, Craig Hamill is our guest. We're going to be back with much more about the Secret Movie Club following these messages. Stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Ed Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Ed Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Too bad we got to start things when there's a wedding going on down there at Nabbs.
You think so? Well, think again. With everybody out of the way, we can move in at that cabin up on the plateau. And by morning, we're all set to ride down on Nab.
Boss, I never thought of that.
Nobody expected you to. Come on.
This is the Voices of the West.
Farmers prowl and the piles howl and the sun is shining bright. I've got a horse and saddle and a 40-foot gun. I'm a highfalutin', shootin', scootin' son of a gun from Old Cheyenne, way out in the west.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you, our guest Craig Hamill. And we're getting into the waning parts of our talk with Craig. Yeah, the twilight here. And that's unfortunate. So we're going to have you back on sometime.
Devin, we haven't got started.
No.
Well, it's a joy. But what can we do? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I
want to know about lightning in a bottle.
Okay. Is that like rooster in a jug?
Well, it kind of. I would like your definition of lightning in a bottle, because I think that would be enlightening to some people out there listening.
Ooh, isn't he clever?
I did a podcast recently where I was talking about lightning in a bottle masterpieces, and that was a very subjective thing for me. But what I was referring to, and I would be curious to know if you guys feel this same thing. You watch a lot of movies, or you listen to a lot of music, or you look at a lot of paintings, whatever it might be. And then every now and then, we were talking about them. You see something and it's amazing. It even among great movies, it stands out. And so lightning in a bottle to me is when a movie, it not only does it all come together, because there are a number of movies that all come together, but it all comes together, and it's something you're never going to forget, and it gives you a feeling that very few movies give you. So, an example of that would be, and I don't know if I mentioned it in the pod, but because this is Voices of the West, and we've talked about John Ford. One of my favorite John Ford film is not necessarily, a lot of people name The Searchers, which I love and a tremendous film, but my favorite Ford is actually Stagecoach. Hmm. And I watch Stagecoach once or twice a year. And when I saw that movie as a teenager, as I was doing my journeys, if you guys remember that film, this was the movie that Orson Welles actually, it was the only movie he watched to make Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. He just watched Stagecoach 35 times and had people come in. And he was like, well, how'd they do that? Why did Ford put the camera there? Da, 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 da. But in the middle of that movie, the wife of the military man has a baby. And I know you guys know this, so I'll go through it real quick. I'm sure your audience all seen the movie. And this is the movie that made John Wayne a star, is the Ringo Kid. And they've all been very judgmental of the woman who's clearly a sex worker, Claire Trevor. And none of them want to be associated with her, except for Ringo Kid, who's a criminal, except for John Wayne. And because of circumstances, she has to be the midwife. There's no way that the social pretensions and snobbery of the other people on the Stagecoach, they need her to help. So she delivers the baby. And when they come out, Ford does this sequence where there's no dialogue.
Yeah.
And they're all looking at the baby. I mean, Andy Devine, I think, does some funny cooing. And then Wayne looks at Trevor, and you can tell he's falling in love with her. And Trevor looks at him, and she's holding the child. And then she goes down this hallway, if you remember this shot, and Ford has her long shadow, and Wayne lights his cigarette on a lamp, and he walks out. And when I saw that, I had never seen filmmaking like that. Mm. And I couldn't even put words to what I was seeing.
Sure.
And that, to me, would be lightning in a bottle when, somehow John Ford, in the space of 3 minutes, is commenting on life and death and falling in love and social pretension and judgment. And then I was just like, what is going on? Incredible.
Most excellent. And
he
we
was
are
a master of silence.
No kidding.
Totally.
Well, the great Orson Welles said when talking about John Ford, about film, I'm sorry, I like the old masters, John Ford, John Ford, and John Ford.
Yep. And I will say that Orson Welles' Citizen Kane is the absolute best movie ever made. Bar none. I'm sorry.
I'm glad you mentioned Wells, because this is kind of my definition of lightning in a bottle. It's movies that changed my life.
Yep.
And I saw Macbeth with Orson Welles, and that literally, that's one of the reasons I ended up where I am today.
Sure. Hey, Craig, we are plumb out of time, man. Quickly,
it's been an honor.
Quickly, what's the next movie coming up at the Secret Movie Club?
Well, I'm putting that together. I actually wish it would have been that we are planning our entire 2026.
Okay.
This is our 10th year anniversary.
Okay.
So it's actually a very big year. I can say that, God willing, we'll be back at the $1 million. I'm trying to do an event at the end of January, but definitely in February. February's Valentine's Day. So I can tell you that some of the titles we're pulling together would be classic romances. Mm-hmm. People love to come with their dates.
Gosh,
but I'm doing all of that right now, hopefully there's one specific title I want to get on film. And if people go to secretmovieclub.com or they just follow us on social media at Secret Movie Club, that's our Instagram, you all should start hearing the announcements within the next 2 weeks.
Okie dokie. Craig Hamill, thank you so much for joining us. Been a blast. And, of course, you are going to be invited back.
Many times.
Yeah, because we like talking films.
I passed the test.
Yes, you did. Thank you so much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You betcha. That's it for this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.
78, 79, 80 O's, all you cinephiles out there. Keep watching.
Thanks for listening, folks. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts, Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.